Hey Wheelers, David Yee, this is my first thought. This morning I got an email from Sarah welcoming me to this, and then I got an email from you, and it read, "Try not to say anything controversial, please, just thoughts that support the status quo." And obviously that's a joke, it's sarcasm, it's classic Wheeler, but I was still groggy and it didn't click right away. And maybe because last week Matthew Jocelyn called me and my compatriots parasites, I thought, "Oh Jesus Christ, I'm being tone policed by Michael Wheeler," which wasn't true, but for half a second this morning, I turned you into something you weren't because last week someone called me something I'm not. This is David Yee in my second thought. I've been thinking about the merits of being loud, of standing up, of getting mad. And when it comes to issues of equity, the onus is always on the people who are being marginalized and stepped on to be the same people who foster a rational conversation. It's on us to be generous and to educate. But what about being loud? What if we all, like Peter Finch and Network, were to go to our windows and shout, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore"? Isn't there still some merit in that? Don't we deserve at least the right to make our witness? Also, have you watched Network lately? Christ, that's a good movie.
John Layton, please leave a message.
Hi John, it's David Yee. This is my third thought. You're a smart guy, good with numbers and all that. Couldn't we develop some sort of algorithm for assessing diversity? Like the way we analyze baseball stats, like that Moneyball movie. So that when theaters hire actors of color to be maids or exoticized set dressing or stick them all in the same show in the park year after year and then claim to have a long history of inclusion, isn't there a way we can refute that mathematically? Because inclusion is about representation, and representation isn't about aggregate numbers, it's about power. It's about the social construct of race and the social responsibility of diversity and inclusion. I mean, surely you can beautiful mind some kind of equation for that, right? Or do I need to call the Moneyball guy?
Hello, and thank you for calling Goodwill Reuse Center. If you know the extension of the person you're calling, that extension is not reachable at this time. Please leave a message at the tone.
Hi, Ms. Nakamura. My name is David Yee, and this is my fourth thought. All day I've been hearing about Goodwill stores closing in Toronto, and I don't want to focus on your inept management or the fact that you were paid over $200,000 to basically shit the bed. I want to talk about metaphors. Toronto has no goodwill left. The goodwill it had known previously was squandered, misappropriated, taken for granted. You can still find goodwill outside of this city, and you'll notice it's doing quite well, flourishing even. But not here. We've lost it here. This city will break your heart some days.
Thank you for calling LASIK MD. Please leave a message after the tone.
Hi, this is David Yee. This is my fifth thought. I came in for a consultation for laser eye surgery today, and I had an additional question. After the procedure, will I still be able to see injustice? What about inequality? Unfairness? Will I still be able to see color and race? I'm asking because there seem to be people who don't see these things, who look at the same situations I do, but miss details that, to me, stand out in stark contrast to what's right, to what's just. Those people seem a lot more content than I am, often more successful, so I guess I'm just wondering how it's possible we can see so differently, and asking which one of us needs to change. I'm David Yee, and this is my sixth thought. I've been thinking a lot about confidence, or lack thereof, about insecurity. I seem to know a lot of people, artists, who I think are brilliant, but they're going through these awful periods of self-doubt, and it's heartbreaking. Because no matter how many times I tell them how phenomenal I think they are, it never quite lands. Confidence never springs from the seeds I plant. And I'm the same way. I have my own periods, or constants, of crippling insecurity, and people tell me, "Oh, but look, you've accomplished X and Y," as though it was an equation to be solved. And then, last night, this guy quoted something he'd heard, I can't remember where, but he said, "Confidence is the consolation prize for the untalented." And I'm like, yeah! So maybe we shouldn't be striving for confidence. Maybe we should just embrace the insecurity in ourselves and others. Maybe that's the thing.
Hello, you've reached the office of Doug Herzog, president of Viacom Entertainment Group. If you'd like to leave a message, we'll return your call as soon as possible. Thank you for calling and have a great day.
Hi, Mr. Herzog. My name is David Yee. This is my seventh thought. My Facebook feed used to contain fairly regular shares of Daily Show clips when Jon Stewart was still hosting. Upworthy would regularly feature Stewart's outrage-fueled rants about Charleston or Ferguson. But since the show got turned over to Trevor Noah, those shares have all but disappeared. I just streamed some episodes from last week. The urgency and outrage I'd come to expect from The Daily Show are still there, just out of another person's mouth. The only difference is, it's a mixed-race person, from South Africa. Which makes me wonder if those posts dried up because when a white man decries racism and injustice, it's something popular culture can rally behind, a voice of sanity. But when a black man says the same thing, maybe it's just too real. I'll tell you something, though. I had to watch 3 straight episodes before I saw a white correspondent on the show, Jordan Klepper. As far as I can tell, the only white correspondent left. They even have an Asian guy now. So while that outrage might be all too real for Upworthy and my friends' feeds, what I'm seeing is Trevor Noah doing something Jon Stewart loved to talk about, but never actually did.
Hi there, you've reached Playwrights Canada Press. We're unavailable to take your call at the moment, but please leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hi Annie, it's David Yee. This is my 8th thought. I've been reading about the 3 cease and desist orders from various publishers regarding Aaron Pike's That's What She Said for copyright infringement. And I just wanted to say that if anybody ever wants to present an excerpt of my work to draw attention to gender parity and the state of women in Canadian theatre, please let them. Because while my work may not be an exemplar of misogynistic writing, I'm certainly not unassailable. And shouldn't we welcome this kind of en masse critique? Isn't that what art is for? So if someone lifts a paragraph from Lady in the Red Dress and says, come on, ye, what the fuck, you can do better, let them. Because I'm sure I can do better. I'm a straight, half-white male. It's almost impossible that I haven't gotten it wrong somewhere down the line. And I'm not going to silence anybody who wants to tell me so.
I'm David Yee. This is my 9th thought. There's been this question of late about dwindling audiences and what to do about them. At Fujian's last show, we had audiences fill out a survey as they left. One of the questions was a fill-in-the-blank statement, I would see more theater if. And it's important to note that over 80% of respondents hadn't seen a Fujian show before. This is not our core audience. Here's how they responded. I would see more theater if. I found more stories that I can relate to. If more shows changed my way of seeing the world. If they were funny, written by playwrights with similar cultural experiences to mine. If they were more challenging, took more risks. If there was more culturally diverse work. If it was more accessible. If I saw myself represented more on stage. There you go.
This is David Yee, my 10th thought. I had laser eye surgery at the end of last week, and as a result, had to spend the next 36 hours in relative darkness, unable to look at a screen. I couldn't read emails or texts or Facebook updates or Twitter. Couldn't watch Netflix. I couldn't Google, what do I do when I can't Google things, which sent me into sort of a meta-feedback loop. I was left alone with my own thoughts, with no way to share those thoughts and have them validated by people online. It was terrifying. Which is all to say that after 36 hours of my own thoughts, I can't think of a single one special enough to record.
Global Toronto News. If you wish to leave a comment, please do so after the tone.
Hi, my name is David Yee. This is my 11th thought. I'm on the Global News website right now reading the article about the Australian athlete who donned blackface to dress up as Kanye West. It's a great article that goes on to unpack the Canadian history of blackface, including some coverage on that Montreal actor, douchebag McRacist, I think that's his name, who was promoting blackface in Quebec. And there's this poll on your site that asks visitors, is blackface ever okay? The possible answers are, I'm sick of this debate and don't get what the big deal is, or, no, it's always racist, or, it's okay as long as it's not making fun of anyone. That last one, I don't even understand. But my concern is, there seems to be a problem with the poll, because I'm looking at the results, and right now, just less than 40% of respondents are saying it's always racist. So more than half of these people think blackface is okay under some circumstances, and more than half of them think it's not a big deal. In Canada. In 2016. And that has to be wrong. It has to be a glitch, right? That can't possibly be what people actually think, can it? Maybe get IT to look at it.
Hello?
Omari?
Yeah, who's this?
It's David, David Yee.
Who?
David Yee. I'm Amy's friend.
Oh, hey, what's up, man? Yeah, sorry, 2 in the morning, what the fuck?
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Why is your phone on?
My phone's always on. I'm an actor.
Sorry. Because I'm doing this thing, right? I'm leaving voicemails for people, so I was trying to catch you when your phone wasn't on.
What? You're leaving voicemails at 2 in the morning?
Yeah, it's this thing that I'm... Yeah, I saw this thing on Facebook, this thing that you were doing, going around to schools, talking about blackface performances to kids, and I just I wanted to record. How did it go?
It went great, man. I went to school and I talked about Black History Month, and it was like everybody learned about racism and stuff. It was awesome. If you call someone at 2 in the morning, they're going to think it's an emergency and they're going to answer the phone.
But it is kind of an emergency because there's this weird resurgence happening now. It's happening now in 2016, and it's alarming.
Okay, well, so what are you going to say on my voicemail?
I don't know. I think that what you're doing is, I was going to say, what you're doing is important. And I think that we get myopic about attacking the perpetrators, like the painters of faces, and we forget that the complacency we've been seeing around it is just as much of an issue. So you're going to the youth, these people you can influence positively by just talking to them. And they're the ones who are receptive to that education and getting them angry and engaged instead of just yelling your voice hoarse. It's an interesting recalibration of attack vector.
Attack vector.
It's what hackers call the path they take to infiltrate a server.
Okay, Mr. Robot. You want to call back and get my voicemail?
Nah, I think I'll just submit this.
Yeah, whatever. I don't really care.
All right, thanks for... I'm sorry again.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
All right. Take care of this.
Yeah, you
too. Oh, and by the way, that was Omari Newton. I'm David Yee. This is my last thought. Thanks for listening.